This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
This hour on the program, we'll talk with Brian Wheeler. He's the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We'll be talking about the city council elections, the board of supervisor elections, and growth and development here in Central Virginia. Good afternoon, Brian. I feel like I haven't seen you in forever.
Good afternoon.
How are you doing?
Good. Well, you were busy doing Virginia Tech coverage last week, and
it sounds
like the community really benefited from your program.
So. I hope so. I hope we provided some type of a forum for a community-wide discussion and an airing of feelings and sentiments, and it was a rough week, I think, for all of us.
Yep.
Where do you want to start?
Let's start with candidates for office. We have city council and board of supervisor elections in Charlottesville and Albemarle County.
Let's start with the board of supervisors first and get that out of the way, because I know there's a lot with Charlottesville City Council we want to talk about. But how many seats are up for the on the Albemarle County Board this year?
The Albemarle County Board of Supervisors has 6 members, and 3 of them are up for election this year. It's a 4-year term if you're elected, and we have 3 candidates who are running for re-election. So that's Ken Boyd, who's in the Ravana District, David Wyant in the Whitehall District, and Lindsay Dorier in the Scottsville District. So all 3 of those sitting supervisors are running for re-election.
And do they have opposition yet?
And they all have challengers. So that's going to make it an interesting race for Charlottesville Tomorrow to cover and for the community to be involved with.
Now, remind us again when you say Charlottesville Tomorrow covers, because most people think of y'all as covering growth and development, but actually you do cover local elections because it's part of your mission.
One of the things we do is try to get all the candidates on record on growth and development issues. So we follow their campaigns from start to finish, and we publish a voter guide that is mailed to every household where there's a competitive race. But we do not pick a candidate. We don't endorse anyone. We ask them the same questions about growth and development and get them on the record. We take excerpts from those conversations, publish them, and send that out to the voters so that they can make up their own mind about these candidates and see how it fits with their views on development.
When are your voter guides published and mailed out?
They will go out in October, right before the elections.
And elections this year in November, that's interesting.
For the city, that's a change. Usually, city council has been elected in May. They have switched to a November election. So this is a new cycle for the city, and we'll talk about that more in a minute. But let me just run through the challengers real quick for the Board of Supervisors. Marcia Joseph is running in the Ravana District. She's currently chair of the Albemarle County Planning Commission. So she's bringing that experience to the table. In the Scottsville District, we've got Denny King and Kevin Fletcher running against Lindsay Dorier. And then Ann Malik is running against David Wyant in the Whitehall District. One interesting little sidebar, Ken Boyd, who's chair of the Board of Supervisors, about a year ago, he set up a development task force. It was to figure out how to streamline the development process and figure out, you know, what could be improved to make things more informed, better inform the public, make it easier on the developers to get things reviewed and get an answer yes or no. The interesting thing is he set up that commission a year ago, and David Wyant is on that with him, but the 2 women running against each of them is also on that development review task force. So I think a year ago, you know, he never would have envisioned that both his opponent and David Wyant's opponent would both be sitting at the table with them for the next year.
So now they have to have these meetings and talk about growth and development when, in fact, growth and development are things that they're all running against each other.
That's right. So those meetings have taken on a new element of interest.
That's messy.
They have finished their process, and they're about to send their recommendations, but I'm getting off on a tangent here. So that's the Board of Supervisors. Again, 3 seats up, Whitehall, Scottsville, and Ravana. If you go to Charlottesville Tomorrow's website, you can find a link to a map of these different districts to figure out which one you live in, if you live in the county.
Because the county actually has districts. The city does not. The city, they're at large, right?
That's right. There are no supervisors at large in the county. So it's just the 6 magisterial districts. Now, city council has 5 seats, and they all are elected at large. So everyone gets to vote on them. There are 3 seats up in 2007, again in November. David Brown, current mayor, is running for reelection. He will announce that tomorrow morning in front of City Hall, and I know WINA will be there, and Charlottesville Tomorrow will be there covering that as well. Kendra Hamilton, current vice mayor, is not running for re-election, and neither is Kevin Lynch. So with Kendra Hamilton and Kevin Lynch stepping out, that makes two open seats. David Brown is running for re-election, so that's the third seat. And we already have four other challengers besides David running. We have four other people who have declared that they want to seek the Democratic nomination. Now, each party, and this is true in the county as well, each party can have a nominating process. They can either have a caucus where they get everyone in a room and the party members pick who they want to represent them in the campaign, or they can have a primary. I don't know that we've ever had a primary for a local race here, and there's certainly not any expected for this campaign. So the Democratic caucus is going to be very important. And the four other challengers for these open seats are Jennifer McKeever, Linda Seaman, Satyendra Hooja, and Holly Edwards. So those are the four other Democrats besides David Brown, but they are all Democrats. So right now in the city, we do not have a Republican candidate, nor do we have an independent candidate.
What? Where are the Republicans?
I don't know.
Surely they can have somebody besides Rob Schilling run for a seat.
I have sent them an email and asked them if they're going to have candidates, and I have not heard back yet.
What a wonderful opportunity to get up and say things and ask questions. You know, personally, I feel like who cares if you win? This is a wonderful opportunity to participate and to get up and ask questions and say things that otherwise you and I both know otherwise would not get said.
And that's certainly an important aspect of the campaign process. I mean, to really vet these candidates, it helps to have different views at the table and see what people are thinking. If there's anyone out there listening who is interested in running, you have until June 12th to submit your paperwork to run as an independent. And that's something that anyone can do. You get enough petition signatures, and it's about 125 signatures. You can put yourself on the ballot.
Yeah. There's a lot of smart, good people in the Republican Party in the city. And I know that they sort of sit back and say, well, we're out of power. But any one of them could step up and run for office in the city and use that opportunity to, what a great opportunity. And all the media is looking at you and wants to hear what you have to say. I just would see it as a wasted opportunity if the party didn't put up somebody.
And I've heard city Republican leaders also say that even though they were in the minority, they wanted to have at least a vote on city council to represent, you know, their views.
Yeah.
So the caucus window is from May 11th to June 12th. So the Republican Party could have a caucus sometime in that period.
When do the Democrats choose their candidates, which likely would win in Charlottesville? It's so heavy with Democrats in the city, it's likely that whoever wins in the Democratic caucus would win the seats on council. When does that take place?
The big nominating caucus is taking place June 2nd, and that'll be at Charlottesville High School at 12:30, and that's where the Democrats will have their nominating caucus convention. And so all the candidates will show up who want the Democratic Party nomination. The party will pick three candidates to run for those three seats. And as I said, they have five candidates to choose from at the moment. There will be a number of forums taking place where city residents can come check out those five candidates. And the first one I'm excited about, the Fry Springs Neighborhood Association is having the first candidate forum that I know about, and that'll be May 15th. They're going to do that at the Fry Spring Beach Club at 7 o'clock. And then there's going to be a Democratic candidate forum held by the city and county Democrats at a monthly breakfast, and that'll be on May 19th.
What do you think are going to be the big issues in the city council election?
I think affordable housing, affordable living choices will be very important. I think the recent budget process the city just went through, I think there'll be a lot of questions about that. Certainly the fire rescue funding has gotten a lot of attention. The whole effort to consolidate or consider the consolidation of city county fire services, apparently the consultant report is recommending against that. And I think there'll be some questions about that. Parks and Rec in the city has taken on a whole lot of interest in that there are a lot of aging swim facilities that either need to be refurbished to be kept operational, or they need to be replaced by some new facilities. The YMCA is looking to build a facility either in the city or the county. They've approached the city and talked about doing that around McIntyre Park, but got a pretty cool reception from city leaders. So the Y has been looking at PVCC in the county south of Charlottesville.
What an awful thing that is. I just have to say that, and I've said this before. What happened with the city? Why did they give the brush off to the YMCA? Wouldn't it be great to have the YMCA here in the city versus out on a bus route out at the PVCC where it's going to end up being like PVCC's gymnasium. It doesn't make any sense to me. That does makes no sense. What happened in the city with Parks and Rec where they pushed the YMCA out to the county?
We should have someone call in and win something. Talk about that.
Who knows the answer to that question? I'll give you a 5-day pass to Gold's Gym. If you can tell me, well, why did the city give the brush off to the YMCA and send them packing? Because the YMCA did come to the city and said, hey, we would love to build a brand new state-of-the-art facility in the city. And yep. The YMCA traditionally and historically has provided these opportunities for folks who can't afford to go join Gold's Gym or join ACAC, which last time I checked is not cheap. I mean, it's not cheap at all. Yep. You really have to have some extra money sitting around to join these things if you're a family. But there's the YMCA. What a great opportunity right there in the city. And the city told them to get lost.
And Albemarle County was willing to put up, it was either $1 million or $2 million, I can't remember the total, to help that project along and have it be in the county. Actually, the county may have contributed to it no matter where it was. I can't remember if they had a geographic restriction on that, but they were so interested in seeing that done.
It makes no sense to me. It's baffling. And it's not like the city's hurting for money.
And one of the things the county was looking for was competitive swimming pools. The swim teams around here do a phenomenal business, and there's so many children in both communities involved in swim programs, and I know that they're looking for additional pools to use.
Well, a plethora of calls during the break, none of whom wanted to go on the air with their statements that the YMCA situation has a great deal to do with Mike Svetz and Parks and Rec in the city, so perhaps that's who we should ask our questions to, although we do have one call right now. Heather is on the line. Heather, thank you for the call. You go right ahead.
I was just going to say that I had heard that it was not saying no. The city didn't say no to the Y. The city said no to giving up more of the Meadow Creek Park to put a Y development in there, because by the time you put the building in and the parking, they would have to give up a lot of parkland.
So they just said no to McIntyre Park, not no to a YMCA.
Right, exactly. And when we were having a discussion, you know, about getting a Y in town, my kids used to have to go over to Waynesboro. They both were year-round swimmers, and they swam for the Waynesboro YMCA for SMAC. And the pool at Buford has a lot of property behind it. It's used for practice right now. And if they could easily put a Y in on the great big field behind the Buford pool and use the existing building for the Y's workout room and playroom and things like that. But, you know, to my neighbors, that would be a great place to put in a new Y and inside the city limits.
Yeah, I think there's just so many people in the city especially that would benefit enormously from having the Y close by versus out at PVCC. Nothing against PVCC, but come on.
I know, and when you have a pool hooked up to another facility, they usually get first dibs on booking it. Like right now, you know, if you want to book one of the city pools, the city schools usually get first dibs on when they have lessons or they take some of the lanes, at least they used to when they taught sixth grade swimming. And so if you have it as an independent place, as the Y is totally independent, then they can do all sorts of daytime stuff for the senior citizens and the
great point.
Kids and stuff like that.
Absolutely. That's a great point. And what about the space, Heather, you know, as you drive into McIntyre Park, like you were going to the carnival and you have the softball fields on the right and that parking lot on the left right there where all those picnic pavilions are, why not put the Y right there?
That sounds great. I mean, they can't make any very much money off of renting the pavilions,
yeah.
But that would be an ideal location.
Yeah, and you got all the parking is right there, easy access right off of 250.
Right.
Kids can walk to it. You just walk down McIntyre Road and you're right in the park.
And it's really close to the high school, too. So
yeah.
For the kids to go for after-school practice or before-school practice.
Heather, a great call, and what do you want, some Domino's pizza or a Gold's Gym pass?
I'm fine. Thank you, though.
You sure?
I appreciate the offer.
Okay.
Thanks for calling, Heather.
Thanks.
You take care. Thank you. That's Heather on Heather regarding the YMCA situation.
The other caller who didn't want to go on the air basically confirmed for us this would be a hot political issue in the city council races.
And it should be. It should be.
Yep.
And I think this should be an issue in this year's election, and folks should be talking about how to figure out how to make this YMCA accessible to the folks in the city. Most of the folks in the city, and it's not a race thing. It's just there's a lot of folks concentrated right here in the city that would benefit from having that Y really close by.
I want to wrap up our election segment and just say In Albemarle County, the Democrats there have also scheduled a caucus. That'll be May 14th, where they will pick their candidates for Board of Supervisors, Commonwealth Attorney, Sheriff, the whole shooting match. And then a big news on Monday, next Monday, the Virginia Public Access Project will be featuring local campaign donation data, campaign finance data for Albemarle County and the city of Charlottesville. It'll go live on their site on Monday, and that's the vpap.org website.
And that's big news because they usually don't do local elections.
That's right. They're doing, I think, 6 or 7 local elections this year. Charlottesville Tomorrow is partnering with VPAP. We're supporting their local data initiative and making sure this information gets from the registrar's office, where it's only been available on paper, into an electronic format where the public can find it on a website.
Let's go back to the phones real quick. John is on line one. John, thanks for the call. Go right ahead.
Yeah, I have a question relating to conflict of interest. We have some candidate. Well, we have one counselor that was once employed by the city, and we have a candidate for council that was employed by the city. Can they vote on the budget if it affects their retirement benefits? And maybe it doesn't. My question is there any conflict of interest there?
My understanding would be that there is not a conflict of interest problem there, as long as, you know, they're not a current employee. Certainly, once they're in a seat on city council, they're not going to be able to, you know, hire a family member or something into a city position because of the nepotism rules. But my understanding in Virginia is the conflict of interest regulations are pretty lax. But I don't think this would be an issue for them as former employee.
Lewis, Lewis is online too. Lewis, quick question. Go right ahead.
Why don't you think that city council will adopt a ward system?
The ward system. And Lewis, hold on just a minute. We'll set you up with some Domino's pizza. Matt, Lewis is on too. Go ahead.
Yeah, the discussion there is, should there be, like in the county where they're magisterial districts, should the city set up a ward-based system where you would vote for a city councilor who would represent your ward? And my understanding is the elections task force that worked in the city, I didn't really follow that too closely, but I believe they recommended against that. Is that right, Coy? Do you remember?
I think so, yeah.
I think that was their recommendation.
That was one of the things I think Rob Schilling would like to have seen, an elected school board, and he got that through. And he also wanted to see a ward system, but that was a much higher mountain to climb.
It's a good question. It's certainly been talked about. It will definitely not happen this November. This November will all be at large elections for city council.
Yeah. But and it probably, if it's just Democrats running, won't even be an issue unless a Republican steps in and makes it an issue.
But you also have to think about the geographic distribution of these candidates and where they're coming from in the city. Is the city well represented in all parts? And I think the people who have advocated for a ward system have said some parts of the city are underrepresented, and they'd like to see somebody from their area.
And but the opposite is true. Some parts are overrepresented.
Mm-hmm.
Before we go any further, I just wanted to congratulate you on your new hire. I have not had an opportunity to do that publicly. You fill folks in on what this is. This is actually very exciting.
Yes, I've doubled my staff, and I now have a compadre to help join me at some of these meetings. Sean Tubbs, who was the founder of Charlottesville Podcasting, will be joining the staff of Charlottesville Tomorrow as our first program officer. And I'm thrilled to have Sean on board. He's made quite a name for himself in the community as somebody very interested in collecting, you know, the sounds of the community and sharing information with the public about what's going on, whether it's arts and entertainment, whether it's speeches at UVA, or, you know, growth and development issues. And of course, he's done a great job getting your show, parked on a place on the internet where more listeners can find this content.
A very great job, and we applaud him every chance we can get. It makes all the sense in the world, too, because if you go to these meetings, you're usually there, and Sean Tubbs is usually there, so it makes
well,
perfect
actually,
sense.
Well, actually, we coordinated our schedules pretty well, so we would, divide up the meetings and not be there at the same time. But we have the same interest, and so that's a good fit. He's also a trained journalist, which I'm not, so he'll bring some expertise there.
Yeah, folks may not know that he's an NPR stringer. He does a lot of work for public radio all around Virginia.
Yep, WVTF, WNRN, yep. Two places he's worked most recently. So
that's wonderful news.
It's going to help a lot.
Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow is my guest, and the phone lines are open at 977 1070.
We have an issue of historic proportions.
What the heck is going on in Woolen Mills?
Woolen Mills has got itself into quite an interesting debate about a historic property. And it's a 1886 historic home called the Timberlake Branham Home, about 7.75 acres. And in 1993, the city designated it as historic and a protected property.
Which means what exactly?
That any development would have to come in front of the Board of Architectural Review to make sure that it conformed and protected the historic nature of the property.
So you couldn't put up a 9-story condo in the backyard of this historic structure.
Yeah, or paint it pink or tear down, you know, parts of it that led to its historic designation.
Right.
You have to take care of the property and maintain its appearance to protect that historic fabric of the Woolen Mills neighborhood.
So it's a historic home in Woolen Mills on 7 acres.
And last week, a resident of Woolen Mills, Bill Emery, had an attorney bring a case to the Board of Zoning Appeals to ask why the designation for the entire property had changed. Basically, on the zoning maps of the city, they had sort of lost track of how much of this property was historic. And the amount that was historic on the city maps shrunk around the house. And other parts of the property have been developed over the years. And in 2001, I believe, the Woolen Mills self-storage project was built. And nobody realized at the time that the place they put that storage facility was designated historic by a past action of city council.
So they sold off some of the land of that 7 acres. So let me get this straight.
Don't know if it was sold off, but it was developed, yes.
And the city forgot, oh, wait, this is historic property. They just forgot it. That's not in dispute.
That's not in dispute. They came to the BZA meeting and said...
The what meeting?
Board of Zoning Appeals.
Okay.
They came to that meeting, and the zoning administrator said a mistake was made. Suddenly I sound like somebody in the Bush administration. A mistake was made. And but when they look at all the documents, they have to basically make their decision based on what is still on paper. So this error slipped through the cracks. And in 2000, it gets worse. In 2003.
Oh, no. Does it really?
In 2003, the city rezoned the entire city. And I'm not familiar with all the details of that, but it was a comprehensive rezoning of the city. This property was involved in that. That would have been the time that somebody might have noticed that the designation had changed around this property, but nobody did notice. And nobody complained after the fact. You know, like maybe you have 30 days to register a complaint. Nobody noticed it. Now, this brings to mind some other major issues in my mind that have had similar controversies. One, let me point out Loudoun County. Loudoun County did a major downzoning in same year, 2003, and that was taken to court by 100 property owners that said, you cannot take away my property rights by downzoning my land and making it so I can have less development potential. That got overturned by the state Supreme Court. They said that because of a technicality in the advertisement that went out to all the residents saying, here's the rezoning we're going to do, that they left out some essential information. So there's an example of where a zoning dispute went all the way through the courts. The court said, you messed up, Loudoun County. You have to start over. In this case, it's a little different because we have a mistake that they admit making, but it's not clear to anyone at the moment whether the Board of Zoning Appeals can even do anything about it. This may have to go to the courts to get resolved.
Why wouldn't it go to city council?
Well, it might. That I guess they could intervene and try to take another action. And the Daily Progress has done a good job the past couple of days covering this. They've gotten an editorial on this very subject today. And the headline on the editorial is fixes, as in if the city council came in to fix it, can start new problems. And those new problems would be for the landowner. Mr. Coyner, who bought the land and by according to the record, didn't know that all of it was previously determined to be historic.
He didn't know he was buying property that he would have
right.
to go to the bar to get approval to develop.
Right, because if you look at the map, it didn't say it was all historic. So then I guess what you're suggesting, Coy, is if city council came in and did that, that might be a taking. You know, if they came in and then fixed the map I guess Mr. Coiner could say, well, now you're taking away a property right that I had.
Even though the property right that he had was the result of a mistake.
That's right.
On the part of somebody in City Hall who was asleep at the drawing board.
And one of the people that came to this zoning appeals hearing was UVA law professor Ann Coughlin, and she had a great line. It was, you shouldn't be allowed to have a taking by typo. And then the point she was trying to make is you shouldn't be able to take something from the public, a historic designation like this, by a typo. Because if the public has no right to fix this and raise the question, get it fixed, then that you know, potentially shakes the confidence in any government decision. If mistakes are made and there's not an easy way to fix them, then you wonder about lots of decisions and people influencing the process. Now, if Professor Coughlin was judge of the court of public opinion, you know, I think she would win her case, because the public clearly is going to come and say, hey, we shouldn't, you know, we should put back the historic designation on all the property.
But Coiner, who bought the property, he bought it on good faith that he was buying property that he could develop by right, pretty
That's
much
right.
any way that he didn't know he was buying protected property.
That's right. Hence the dilemma. And the Board of Zoning Appeals made, now the public didn't like this, but I think, I'll give my opinion. I think they made a smart decision. They didn't make a decision at the hearing.
government.
They deferred it. And I think that was very smart. They deferred it, and they are going to seek outside counsel to advise them on this. This is a very interesting part of the process, because at the Board of Zoning Appeals, you have city staff in the city attorney, Craig Brown, and you have the zoning administrator. They're both there presenting the city's case. You know, we made a mistake. Here's what the maps are. We look at the maps and we see that, you know, Mr. Coiner was told it wasn't historic and he could develop parts of this land. And that's what they're basing their decision on. However, Craig Brown can't advise the Board of Zoning Appeals. He's there representing the zoning administrator. So the Board of Zoning Appeals really doesn't have an attorney present to help them. And it was interesting, in the meeting, Craig Brown kept saying over and over, remember, guys, I'm not here giving you advice, but here's what I see. And I'm just representing the zoning administrator that works for the city. And I can tell you what, you know, how he made his decision. And then Craig Brown left. He left the room. Said he had some prior engagement. And whether that's true or not, it was a smart thing for him to do, because it's just going to get very complicated.
Yeah.
So the Board of Zoning Appeals said, hey, we need to defer this. We need
now,
to
do they have an attorney on staff for the Board of Zoning Appeals?
No.
So they've got to pay to,
they
hire,
have to
somebody.
Go hire somebody.
So if you pay taxes in the city.
Yeah.
I mean, this is ridiculous.
Well, but I think it's
good that they have a lawyer coming in to advise.
That's right.
They obviously need that. This is a tricky situation.
That's right.
However, If they hadn't, all of these problems would have been prevented if somebody would have just done their job in the first place.
Yep, it's an unfortunate mistake. And, you know, I have direct experience with a similar mistake in Albemarle County. There was a project out in Ivy, an industrial site, and there was a 200-foot buffer protecting nearby land from industrial development. And in the 1980 great rezoning of Albemarle County, that buffer was eliminated on a zoning map. And it's the same exact situation. An error was made, and really the public looked at that and said, boy, without a whole lot of money and a super sharp attorney and a whole lot of time on our hands, we're not going to be able to get that buffer put back. And my fear is that the folks in Woolen Mills are going to discover that same reality, that this is going to be very hard to correct now that another property owner has come in and has designs on that property. It's an unfortunate mistake, but my prediction would be that the attorney's going to come in and say the BZA does not have authority to fix this, and then they're going to open it up to city council and further court action.
And it's time for the speed round, where we do our very best to fit in a whole lot in a short amount of time. Brian gives us the very latest on development projects here in Central Virginia. Let's start with Biscuit Run.
If I get 3 out of 5 right, can I get a prize?
Biscuit Run.
Biscuit Run is going to the Albemarle County Planning Commission again for a public hearing on May 29th. That's another opportunity for the public to come out, express their opinion about Biscuit Run.
And there's going to be a whole lot of people there, I bet.
3,100 homes south of Charlottesville.
The largest development in the history of Albemarle County, the biggest neighborhood ever!
Okay, what's next?
Old Trail Village.
Old Trail Village is out in Crozet in the designated growth area. About 2,100 homes. Really not a lot going on out there right now. They're doing some things at the clubhouse, golf course. The development you see out at Old Trail right now is primarily by right. The new development is yet to really come in full speed, but a town center will be developed, and now that the movie is out of there, Bruce Almighty or whatever one was.
What about the, isn't there a Harris Teeter going into Crozet somewhere?
Always that's the rumor, that some major grocery store is coming in next to the Blue Ridge Building Supply. But I think they're honestly waiting for the market to really be there.
I can remember years ago when there was a sign, there used to be a sign there saying, you know, big shopping center coming with a grocery store. Yep. And it's so old that I think the sign is gone now.
I have not heard an update on that lately. Jim Duncan at a real estate agent out in Crozet follows that religiously, though. And his blog is a good source of news on the Crozet grocery store front.
North Point.
North Point, that rezoning, of course, has been approved by the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors. This is the development north of Airport Road on the right as you head up 29 North. It's a long stretch that goes all the way from there to the North Fork of the Ravanna River, waiting on a site plan to come in for that. So no immediate development, although I guess the clearing could start any time for the retail.
Is that the one that's like 4,000 homes on 2 acres or something like that?
Oh, no, it's not that many. No. How many acres did you say?
Hollymead Town Center.
Hollymead Town Center. Okay. Area A1 and A2 are the two parts that have not been completely...
where all the mud is.
That's right. The big mud fields. The stone house is gone, by the way.
Yep.
That controversy has been cleared up by the local media. Area A1 is where the stone house was. That's the retail portion. That's been approved. That now goes to the Board of Supervisors in June. Area A2 is largely residential. That's up behind the it's a Harris Teeter out there, right?
Yeah, go
behind the Harris Teeter. And that is still under review. Planning Commission and the county will hear that in May 22nd.
Albemarle Place.
Albemarle Place is the big development at Hydraulic Road and Route 29. It wraps around the Sperry Marine facility. It's the size of two downtown malls and will be a substantial development. Part of it has been cleared already. They've sort of cleared everything behind the 7-Eleven, which is left there as a little island right now. Someday soon, the 7-Eleven will go as well once that deal is worked out. But Albemarle Place is stalled right now, by all reports, trying to figure out sewer capacity issues.
Fontaine Research Park.
That's the one I told you not to ask me about.
Oh. Downtown Charlottesville.
Downtown Charlottesville. There's some big meetings coming up related to downtown mall development. And real quick, there's a joint meeting on May 1st with City Council, Planning Commission, and the Board of Architectural Review to talk about these 9-story buildings downtown. And also, there's a design workshop this week about the Water Street parking lots. So Charlottesville Community Design Center, April 26th. Come and let people know what you think about those two lots.
Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville Tomorrow. We're out of here. See you folks tomorrow.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.